So let's have a look at the business stories around today's papers and online. Delighted to be joined in studio by Louisa Meehan of Woodview HRM and also by Paul Allen of Paul Allen and Associates. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
You're very welcome to the program.
Morning, Bobby.
Now, Paul, we might start with you. I know you're a D4 lad, but urban versus rural divide, it's just three counties pay 78% of tax.
Memo to myself, don't wear a pinstripe on a Saturday morning. I'm only joking. Yes, the front page story in the Irish Independent by John Burns talks about the three counties paying 80% of all taxes in the state. It's a story I think we've all known, but obviously Leo Varadkar earlier this week opened an absolute can of worms and then he came back the next day and apologised. But it's something we've all known. But if you take into account around the country, we've got Big Pharma in takes of Cork, we've got Apple, and I'm sure the IBA, the IDA and the IBEC have known all about this over the years, but there's a huge difference.
And in
the context of the recent protests, I know the farmers have been banging on the IFA and its president, Francie, has been banging on about the rural divide for so long, but nobody's been listening. And it's a golden opportunity for parties like the Independents to come out and reinforce this message. But it's something we've always known.
Louisa, I'm not sure this helps anything, pitting one county against another,
yeah,
saying Longford isn't paying enough tax. I think, as a society, there's urban, there's rural, but as a combination, we're still a society.
We all rely on each other. Mm. And so, look, what they're saying is that Dublin, Cork and Galway, so three counties, pay 78% of the tax. They have about 50% of the population. If you take out the corporate tax, they're paying slightly less than that, about 67%. But what you're forgetting is that if you're living in a rural area, so if you're a farmer in a rural area, you may be paying less tax, perhaps, collectively, not individually, than in an urban area, but they are also responsible for maintaining the rural area. So farmers maintain the farms, the hedgerows, when we go out and we drive through the countryside and we see how gorgeous it is, the farmers are the people who are maintaining that. And we need to look at it as a collective. We rely on the rural areas when we live in an urban area to provide us with food, to provide us with, you know, the trees, all of the things that we engage with. And they may rely on people in urban areas who perhaps collectively, as a collective, pay more tax. Individually, individuals in this country are all subject to the exact same tax rules. So whether you're earning 100,000 and you're living in Longford or you're earning 100,000 living in D4, you're paying the same percentage of tax. So we need to sort of step back and see how do we support each other.
Just if I may add in relation to that, Bobby, that the economist who's put this together, a Davy economist, said Leo Varadkar was basically on it, was so accurate in relation to this, where Ireland relies on the nearest city to subsidise them. And again, in terms of the building of cities, the infrastructure is there, the big companies are there. You look at the footprint of the IDA, they put them in the main metropolitan areas, and it works perfectly well.
And that's why, as stated here, cities would be where the most high-skilled and well-paid jobs are located, which is why they are the major drivers of Irish tax revenues. No surprise there.
No, yeah. But it's also where the most resources are. Yeah. So, like, I live in the country. I have a septic tank. I have to pay to deal with that. If you're living in a city, you don't even notice where it goes. You have no idea. So the resources are different. And pitting one against the other doesn't help anybody.
No, and again, it's a sensational headline, and Varadkar, the fact that he had to apologise,
as we always say to clients,
he was rattled by it.
You say to clients, put your brain in gear before you open your mouth, but obviously, sorry Leo, you got it wrong.
Some interesting developments on the tech front, Paul. Irish tech jobs facing significant upheaval. We're seeing Meta cutting 10% now of global workforce as it invests massively in AI. Firstly, let's look at the story and then maybe we'll look at maybe some of the wider ramifications out of this.
Yeah, Jack Power in the Irish Independent talks about the government is bracing itself for really strong turbulence in relation to the tech sector and artificial intelligence, threatening to cause significant upheaval to large parts of the Irish workforce in the coming years. about 2 weeks ago, the EU ambassador, the American EU ambassador, Andrew Pulsner, was in saying the guys in Silicon Valley are talking about Europe, the levels of regulation they're putting onto this sector. And they're talking about, you know, in terms of the regulation, regulate the products, not the innovation. And where we are at the moment, we're looking at very serious levels of upheaval, because the fact is the new pieces of kit, the AI will replace enormous amount of jobs. We see it ourselves when you book a hotel, you ring a call center, or the various providers, you're talking to an AI bot. And while the regulation and the issue in terms of Europe is clamping down on all of this of regulating the innovators rather than the products, China is steaming ahead with all these developments. So we're in for a big, massive job losses in relation to key areas of the sector.
Yeah. One thing that isn't mentioned, and my figures may not be, as I understood it, Meta used to employ nearly 3,000 people in Ireland.
They've already reduced their workforce. So they're currently employing 1,800 workers in Ireland. There's a 10% reduction across the globe, which is going to be about 8,000 staff. We don't know what the percentage will be in this country. I think one thing that's interesting to me to watch is, will they do what Elon Musk did and sort of send an email out to their staff and say, you're fired, as opposed to following the rules within Ireland for collective redundancies? And I would hope that Meta do follow the Irish legal system. You know, when we think about large scale redundancies like this, it's easy to see big numbers and headline numbers. But if you have an organization with 1,800 people and you're about to let 180 go, if it is 10%, there's a good chance that there's 200 or 300 people in there who want to go. So it's how are they determining who's leaving? What does that look like? What are the opportunities for those individuals once they do leave?
Yeah.
And with AI, yes, there is a shift, but there's as much research coming out and commentators and people who work in this field who are saying that there will be more jobs created by AI. There will just be different jobs. So some of the...
Yeah, but I'm not sure I agree with you there, Louisa, because, you know, if you've got redundancies across the sector, I'm not so sure there'll be that many putting up their hand in a voluntary place, because there may not be the chance of...
Well, what can they fall back on, Bobby? Like, if you lose your job, where do you get back in? Because if you have a certain area of expertise in the service industry, now the AI model has replaced, you have to go back to retraining,
well, that's
skilling.
That's unfortunately the reality, that people are going to have to retrain.
Yeah.
And I think... You know, regardless, on a wider note, you know, retraining, re-educating.
All of that. A real life example. Yesterday, I was interviewing an individual who worked in, I won't say where he worked, he worked in a large tech organization as a project manager, and he's going into the last 20 years of his career, and he wants to step out of that and he wants to go work in the charity sector, doing something where he can bring his skill set, but he has more meaning from his perspective in terms of the work that he's doing. So yeah, you may not necessarily work out of job A and into job A in a different company, but that doesn't mean that people aren't looking at their next phase. And that sense of, I start a job at 20 and I do the same thing at 65.
Yeah.
Most people have lost that.
Yeah.
So there are people who want to transition into something new.
Yeah, no, and it's good to have a healthy debate on it. And as you say, there's no career for life anymore, so... Yep.
But Bobby, rest assured, I don't think AI will be replacing broadcasters, so, you know, take it easy.
You never know. what about Intel, Paul?
Intel, as we were going
through... This is a business that was... practically written off.
It was banjo.
And it's great to see that it seemed, because there's a big Irish interest here, it's great to see that its share price rose 24% in New York yesterday, hitting an all-time high. So, you know, and there was all sorts of debt nails talked about for this business.
It's an incredible story.
And it seems to have come back from the brink.
And you would think with technology, time wouldn't be kind to it. But even looking at its logo in the piece today that's in the paper in terms of the value of the stock and where it is, it's just incredible that it's come literally from the grave to come back up.
No, it has had an investment from the US state, which is interesting. And again, there was some surprise when this happened, because the US weren't usually...
but also there was a charm offensive
in private companies.
There was a charm offensive in relation to Intel towards the White House and its administration. So that obviously helped click and talk up the stock. But that's great for investors who at this stage must be penniless in terms of the performance of the of share price. And also, let's remember how it halved its workforce at one stage in Leixlip. Its footprint in Ireland was reduced. But this is terrific news.
There's a significant investment here from the White House in an organization that makes microchips from a government that's worried about government involvement in tech companies and what they're listening to, which is quite interesting. But we'll say no more about that. One thing that I think is curious in here from the numbers in terms of planning and strategy, back a couple of years ago, they sold a half of a building or a building to Apollo Global Management. They're looking to buy it back for $3 billion more than what they sold it for, which seems like a lot of money to spend on what you had 3 years ago. Now, you know, so I think there's a lot more behind this story that we're not being told. And I would be really curious for some investigative journalism into what's going on, because $3 billion to buy back what you owned 2 years ago is a lot by anybody's standards, no matter how big an investment is.
Well, the stock market seems to think it's a good story.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good punt, yeah.
And, Paul, no panic over aviation fuel, even as airlines start reducing flights. Are they telling us the truth? Aer Lingus have cancelled some summer flights. They're saying it's due to maintenance issues. Ryanair have rolled back on a plan to expand its summer services. They're saying it's because of the government cap. Yeah. Have we been told the truth there?
Well, I think never waste a good crisis in relation to this. The story's out there. I know they're changing some of the flights and they're cancelling some of the flights, and they could obviously always put on a fuel surcharge. But the performance of airlines is going to obviously frighten a lot of listeners this morning, because we've got a bank holiday weekend coming along. People are heading to the sunny skies. They're leaving the country. There's another angle there in the papers today about staycations. But the numbers, there's 36.4 million passengers in Dublin Airport last year. It was 11.1 going through the doors in 3 month summer period. So that's enormous. Again, the other story is that I don't think they've done anything on the cap at Dublin Airport in relation to increasing the numbers to come in, because obviously with the Ryder Cup and other spectaculars happening in the country, and I noticed Peter Aiken, the great concert promoter, was on yesterday saying he was fearful if this is going to happen, people won't be coming in to see the performers, and also the performers will be cancelling, because if they come into the country, how are they going to get out of the country if flights are cancelled? So there's a serious knock-on impact in relation to that. And this is right across Europe.
Yeah, I'm a bit confused about this story, because if the price of jet fuel has more than doubled in the last year, fuel then accounts for a quarter to a fifth of all an airline's costs.
Yeah.
We should be seeing that on the ticket prices.
I feel like there's two stories here, and I feel like when you look at them together, it's a bit like a magician. Look over here so that you don't look at what I'm doing over here. Because when you read underneath it, it very much sounds like the airline industry, the hotel industry, are very concerned about what's going on in relation
in
to
the second half of the year.
In the second half of the year. And we see Ryanair rowing back plans on expansion, Aer Lingus pulling back because of maintenance, Lufthansa pulling back because of maintenance, but large numbers of flights being cancelled, routes being cancelled. So the airline industry are reacting to what's happening in preparation. We see reduced bookings in the hotel sector. So as much as we're worried about getting out of the country, and I think that's what we focus on, the hotel sector are looking at people coming in, and they talk about the fact that there was 450 million worth of tourism that comes either through or via the Middle East. So that tourism is unlikely to come this year. So I think that what we're seeing is individuals are evaluating where they're going, when they're going, who they're going with as a result. So you've got the fuel crisis, you've got the war, so the security crisis, and you've got the impact on cost of living, so less disposable income. But it feels to me like this story is, on the one hand, the airline industry coming out saying it's all fine, book your flights, because they need people to book. And on the other hand, saying, yeah, we've got some really big worries over here. We're not sure what's going to happen.
I think
but
I agree.
Don't pay attention to that. We'll figure that out. You're okay.
Yeah, because you don't want to damage your sales
exactly.
Pipeline.
Bobby, I think as well, like, spare a thought for Michael O'Leary and Ryanair. Sometimes the margins on a seat's about €18, where they're going to make more money on scratch cards and drink and sandwiches. So if the margins are getting so pinched like that, why not cancel the flight and try and merge the two if you've got a half empty flight? But I've never been on a half empty Ryanair flight.
I was on one last week, and I only noticed, I saw the trolley coming up and only two people purchased from the trolley.
Yeah.
So there's no big money being made.
Don't get me wrong. If my kids are there, they'll purchase something. But whether or not they can pay for it's a whole other thing. But yeah, I think it's, you know, it's really clear that we want to travel. People like traveling. That was clear after COVID. And they talked to that as well in the article, the importance of that global element. But there is less money and people are paying more attention to what's going on in terms of where they're travelling to.
And just before we leave it, I didn't actually realise that we, in Europe, hedging is a big part of fuel purchasing.
Yeah.
Whereas in the US, it's not.
Yeah.
So they could be far more vulnerable in the short term.
This seems to be somewhere where the European airlines seem to have really done us a favour.
Yeah.
And we seem to be in a much stronger position than the American airlines who are struggling already.
That's a point that Conor McCarthy, who runs the regional side of Aer Lingus Regional, was making the point that we hedge our fuel and continue to lock away prices at a level that we know will enable the airline to keep going. But where's it going at this stage? We were supposed to getting it passed on, and I know the government gave various reductions in certain areas, but as some of us who read war books and history books, wars don't end in weeks, they end in years.
Absolutely.
So this is going to go on for a long time.
Louisa, some interesting stuff happening. KPMG, EY, demoting partners in end-of-job-for-life model in the UK. What do you tell us a little bit about this? Is this just a way of dealing with, I suppose, an employment issue?
So what this screams to me is the impact of AI, the real impact. So what we're talking about here is a tradition in the large four consulting firms where once people got to a certain point, they became equity partners. And equity partners here, the salary that they're talking about is in the region of £880,000 sterling. So that means that they had a share in the profit of the organisation as opposed to salaried. So they're not really demoting them. What they're doing is changing their pay terms from equity to salaried. So they're still being called partner because people who engage with these individuals like grandiose titles, and so they like to give them all kinds of weird and wonderful titles, but they want to take them out of a share in the profit and have them on a salaried piece so that they're an employee, not an equity owner. And it doesn't talk to AI in the article, but for me, working with some of these organizations, they are massively impacted by AI, because what you may have gone to a KPMG for, you can now have AI help you with.
So so effectively, though, this is a way of sorting out performers from non-performers.
Yeah, balance sheets and timesheets.
Yeah.
The scenario.
They're talking, I would
cruel
say,
and all as that may sound, but that's, I would is that say not the reality of
I
this?
Think there's an element of that, but I would say it's far more to do with cost containment and predictability. So if you are putting them into a salaried bracket, then you have more control over what their salary is moving forward, and you can retain more of your profit. So I would say that the pressure isn't necessarily coming from per performance. They may be using that as the decider in terms of who they're sort of targeting, but I would say it's actually got far more to do with a cost impact.
We've seen this about maybe 10 years ago within the legal profession, where performance was there, where they were merging and acquiring other firms, and then they decided let's break up, and then as a leading partner, well, how much are you worth, and what's the people underneath you? Was it three or four times your salary? Four times your salary in order to keep going as a partner, and then the performance figure. So the legal sector grasped this a number of years ago. So now the accounting firms are now eating themselves in relation to breaking this down. But you'll see it break up. Like, there's so many good firms over the years. I cite BDO Simpson Xavier when they decided to turn, and other members left and broke up and had their own consultancy firms. And I think when you're involved in consultancy and accounting, it's on a one-to-one relationship. And it's the senior partners you want to be dealing with. So I think it's a good opportunity, but I think the guys need to have the ability to see around the corner as to what's going to happen next. But it's a very good story today.
All right. Golf fans up for the Ryder Cup tickets selling out. 500 lids, no
Fantastic.
Problem. Twice what they were in Rome in 2023. This is one case of demand.
It's
very
huge.
Much exceeding supply.
Yeah. I mean, I think one thing that's really good about this is that they were open to Irish consumers first, a certain number of tickets, and they sold out within an hour. I think there was a queue of 60,000 people. The ticket price, though, is very, very high. It's €500. It's probably going to go up even higher when they go public. And I do worry, like, what about the fans that can't afford it? What about the next Rory McIlroy, who maybe doesn't have €500 to go and watch it for a day. Now, as you read through the story, it is possible to go and watch the practice day tickets for €89 for adults, €20 for juniors. So hopefully there is an opportunity there for people who want to go see the players but can't afford to be there for the actual game itself.
Well, congratulations to Adair. The place looks magnificent and new with the motorway and elements. I think this is great news. RTE got up on its high horse, jumping up and down during the week about the price of them, and then went to the people, members of the Adair and Limerick golf clubs, and they said, fine, they're going to put €50 in a jar each week and they're going to pay for it. You're going to spend an entire day. It's an entire day. It's a life experience. Mm. An entire day. You go to other world events. And at the moment, people are organising a Katie Taylor. Hopefully, it'll happen in Croke Park. But to have security and the elements, the razzmatazz, it all costs money. Yeah. It's an international showcase. So if you want to be there, otherwise you can sit at home and watch it on television for free. So the opportunity is there, and it's a great one.
What about Bantry Bay, Paul? Primed as a super yacht playground.
Sure.
Again,
it's also the Shannon, and there's that loan. You can put barges and other elements.
But good to
that.
See the Port of Cork. We're it's out terrific. In Miami selling the Port of Cork to the cruise ships.
Yeah, but the Port of Cork is incredible.
Yeah.
And this is great news for everybody. All, dare I say, all boats will rise, restaurants, opportunities. We saw it before a number of years ago when the K Club hosted the Ryder Cup. It is absolutely spectacular. The President of the United States, he'll be over again, and it's a great opportunity. And
well
sure done,
about
everybody.
That, yes, but let's see.
Well, if you ask the guards, they're looking for extra time.
Finally, let's end on a positive note. The weather is fantastic. Hands up if you want this weather, lovely weather to hold. Somebody told me it's good till the bank holiday Monday.
Exactly. I mean, this could not be better news, could it? And I have two young men out camping all weekend, so I'm thrilled. We're looking at, you know, 21 degrees, 20 degrees. We're looking at having weather that's better here than in Spain. Alan O'Reilly from Carlow Weather saying it's because of high pressure that looks like it's here to stay for a while. And I think we all relish this. It has been such a long, wet, miserable winter that we are looking for really warm weather.
But what a beautiful country we have, and people down in Dingle and all around the place. And
get out there and enjoy it, folks.
Absolutely.
All right, big thanks to our guests, Paul Allen and Louisa Meehan. Thanks for a great review of the business stories.